Dreams deferred. What happens to a dream deferred? Neonatologists such as myself are trained to discuss hard truths: birth defects, genetic disorders, the limits of viability and intensive care. The hardest conversations, however, are often those for unexpectedly ill babies born after a healthy pregnancy. These discussions gently dispel the nurturing visions parents have harbored. I spent the first decade of my career pushing myself to cultivate fluent phrases I could offer as a benediction when parents faced these hard truths. I learned to steady parents' frightened stares across radiant warmers during infant stabilization. Sometimes parents calmed when we spoke. Tears slowed, breaths deepened. Sometimes they sat or stood, silent. I held their silence quietly. Sometimes a barrage of questions tumbled out, or parents yelled at me or to me. I found strength in these conversations, making daily space for tenderness in speech, for kindness in a locked gaze, for compassion in a hand held, gave me purpose as a physician. My heart knew what I would need were the roles reversed. The looks of relief, of trust, of assurance from parents in crisis suggested that I gave some small comfort. I believed I had almost mastered communication in these contexts, that I knew how to help heal with words. And then COVID-19 brought a new type of consultation. My first such consultation began when I met a woman alone in her hospital room a few hours after her delivery. She had COVID-19 when she gave birth to a baby boy. When I met this new mother, she had not held or touched her son. She'd had no visitors, not even her partner. Masked, shielded nurses and doctors had cared for her. Her son remained in the neonatal intensive care unit to protect him from her severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2 or SARS-CoV-2 infection. Her misery was manifest in a quiet stream of tears. I sat, smoothed my gown, and introduced myself. The first question she asked me was, "Can I ever have my baby back?" I felt disturbed when she questioned her maternal rights. I had nothing to offer but my willingness to witness her suffering before she spent a few days coughing her way through COVID-19 alone and apart from her son. I stood in her room, shattered. In that moment, I could not reconcile well-intended national practice recommendations based on limited available evidence with her solitary suffering. I met her eyes, red from crying without her son at her side. I said his name. Early in the COVID-19 pandemic, with scarce data on COVID-19 in newborns, experts worried that mothers with SARS-CoV-2 could infect even healthy newborn babies with the virus. These infections might be mild, lethal, or they could not occur at all. No one knew. Experts drafted recommendations with the laudable goal of protecting newborn babies from this undefined virus. Clinical guidance suggested neonatal intensive care units would not knowingly host parents with COVID-19. Babies who were ill and needed intensive care would have no parental presence while their parents convalesced. Healthy babies whose parents had COVID-19 remained initially apart from their parents until more was known about the puzzle of COVID-19-free newborn care. The onus to explain newborn separation as a means of infection prevention to women during their deliveries fell on neonatologists. I found myself donning N95 respirator masks and face shields before going to delivery or postpartum rooms, where I sat, my shoulders hunched and my own breaths shallow, preparing mothers for the days to come when they could not hold their own babies. My words stung. Many of the parents I served were essential workers, unable to work from home or self-isolate. Separation from their newborns amplified the difficulty of contracting this novel coronavirus at a time when their bodies were meant to be healthy. The questions these mothers asked me, the tears they shed, exposed unparalleled anguish. After months of pregnancy, they craved the rub of their lips over velvety infant skin, the grasp of their baby's fists around index fingers. Their cravings were left to fester. The parents of my former patients had taught me to understand the emotions parents typically endure in the neonatal intensive care unit. Navigating this pattern of grief was a learned skill. Before the pandemic, I anticipated which days might be hard and which decisions needed an extra explanation or middle-of-the-night telephone call. I had no strategies with which to prepare the grief of newborn separation. I felt wholly inadequate. I numbed myself to this inadequacy at work by dwelling on the joys of my own children. I drove home after those early pandemic shifts to their antics, pillow forts before breakfast, hands-free bike rides after dinner, football tosses by floodlight at dusk. Returning to work each day meant recognizing those precious moments at home were perhaps the same dreams deferred for my patients' parents. Contemplating the separation they were going through brought me heartache. The exposure to this new variant of maternal grief consumed me. People around me were dying from COVID-19. Hospital systems, including my own, faced unprecedented numbers of COVID-19 cases. As I sat with the mothers at my hospital, I tried to reconcile my understanding that while theirs was a single space of sorrow against a vast backdrop of global upheaval, to them, it was an experience of boundless enormity. During this time, another mother asked me if her child would ever be returned to her. She, too, had COVID-19 when she gave birth. Her question was uttered with imploring sobs. I did not speak her language. Despite the need for an interpreter, I recognized sounds akin to the noises I have heard parents make when their babies die. Each question she asked seemed born of fear. Is my baby alone or with other babies? Are you sure I can bring him home and not another baby? I listened, lamented. When she asked, "Do I need papers to claim my own baby?" I wondered if she was undocumented. I could have been wrong. If I was right, my asking could make her feel vulnerable, unsafe, exposed. I did not ask. I was all too aware that my intentions might be informed by unhelpful societal stereotypes, but I worried her fears stemmed from the well-publicized policies of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security that encouraged immigration and customs enforcement to separate children from their parents at the U.S. border and detain these children in facilities. Although the context was different, she had been separated from her baby in the neonatal intensive care unit. I felt powerless because I could not change the situation and became angry that I could be perceived as an agent of mistrust. As a physician at a safety net hospital, I aspired to be sensitive to systemic mistrust. Safety net hospitals were born of necessity in the United States to care for patients irrespective of insurance or immigration status. These hospitals are often in impoverished neighborhoods and set apart from the elite medical centers whose patients are more likely to have private health insurance. My hospital remained devoted to providing exceptional and humanistic care to our community before and during the pandemic. The families I served were disproportionately affected by COVID-19. The babies delivered in our hospital were often born to Black, Brown, or Native American women, to teenagers, to women living in shelters or homeless encampments, to immigrant and refugee women, or to women affected by the opioid epidemic. Empowering vulnerable women to give birth with dignity was an aspirational goal at my hospital. I wanted the world to know that COVID-19 had made the days after childbirth harrowing for these women, that efforts to protect their babies from a new disease had unwittingly morphed into an undignified act, and that these women were suffering alone. Weeks later, when anti-racism protests outside my hospital highlighted the suffering of so many, suffering kept behind red lines for so long, the world outside helped me feel hopeful for change. The privilege of whiteness, privilege in which I share, was being identified and challenged, and the rights and dignity of Black people decisively affirmed. But the weeks before the protests, the weeks I spent seeing parents grapple with grief, were arduous. During those long weeks, a third mother asked me, "Will I get my baby back?" I apologized while providing reassurance. She had spent a couple of days without being able to see her baby. Alone in her hospital room, she pumped milk for her baby with such dedication that her nipples bled, chafed by the plastic shields of her breast pump. She was self-assured and firm as she asserted that the NICVU camera, the photographs, the clinical updates were inadequate. She was right. Distressed, I nodded in agreement as she said, "I need to hold my baby." "I know," I told her. I did know. But at that time, in that moment, I could not make it so. As the ramifications of newborn separation became clear, my peers and colleagues began to speak out. Ethicists partnered with physicians to argue against newborn separation, and data suggested infant infection was rare and usually well tolerated. My hospital shifted away from newborn separation as a means of infection prevention. My own angst over the maternal rights of the parents I served felt validated. Experts revised the policy, but not before many women withstood the pain of a dream deferred. COVID-19 had taught me a hard truth. I had never mastered communication. The words I spoke with such conviction had always been inadequate. My efforts served as mere sticking plaster for deep wounds, wounds that could not begin to heal until infants were held, cuddled, caressed, home. This parental tenderness infused a lifetime of dreams into the lives of my patients, dreams to nurture these future adults along a path to one day help heal the world.